It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, here up on Signal Hill, where it is a balmy 52 degrees, and the sun is starting to peek out between the clouds. They are calling for rain today, mainly after 1 p.m., high near 52. Southeast winds are going to blow today and overnight and a little bit tomorrow, and bring those rains, gusting as high as 25 today, low around 48 tonight, southeast winds to 30, and rain likely up until 10 a.m. tomorrow. Those southeast winds are going to keep up, gusting as high as 25 tomorrow too. Coming up on the Midday Report, the ferries will sail even if the government shuts down. Kodiak's Aleutic Museum get a grant from the National Park Service for their repatriation efforts.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Joe Biden is celebrating a bipartisan infrastructure agreement that includes nearly $600 billion in new spending on everything from rail, roads, and bridges to broadband and electric vehicles. But as NPR's Tamara Keith reports, it remains unclear whether the measure has sufficient support on Capitol Hill.
The agreement is between a bipartisan group of 20 senators and President Biden, but the deal will need 60 votes to pass, and some progressive Democrats say it compromises too much. Biden was asked whether he's sure it can pass.
I don't have any guarantee, but what I do have is a pretty good read over the years of how the Congress and the Senate works.
Biden says a separate bill will move in tandem, aimed at human infrastructure, preschool, community college, paid family leave, and more.
I'm going to fight like the devil to get that done, but it's not going to be with Republican help. I'm going to have to get every Democrat and do it through reconciliation if it gets done.
There's no margin for error, and keeping all Democrats aligned could be tough. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
The Florida community of Surfside is holding out hope that no other victims are trapped beneath the rubble of a condo building that partially collapsed this morning as many tenants slept. But officials have yet to account for 99 individuals. They've confirmed at least one death. 35 tenants made it out alive. Ofi Osin-Cohen says firefighters rescued her from her fourth floor balcony.
It is just overwhelming to see when we opened the door and saw that the building had collapsed. It was just surreal, really surreal.
Authorities say they don't yet know what caused the beachfront building to collapse, but it's left residents questioning everything from construction mishaps to overdevelopment to climate change as they process this morning's events. Veronica Zaragovia of member station WLRN is on the scene with reaction.
The beachside town of Surfside has roughly 6,000 residents and spans about eight blocks. Commissioner Eliana Salzhauer says everyone knows each other here. She says she got the call before going to sleep and hasn't rested since.
That's going to be the difficulty in figuring out who's missing and who isn't missing, because there's a lot of property owners that rent their property. But it's a tragedy. Whether it was a resident or a tourist, it doesn't matter. It's a tragedy.
She says the collapse is also a call to stop overdevelopment in this area and to reassess how buildings are constructed. For NPR News, I'm Veronica Zaragovia in Surfside.
Fewer people filed state unemployment claims last week. The Labor Department reports applications for jobless insurance fell by 7,000 from the previous week to 411,000. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes the day up 322 points, or nearly 1%, ending at 34,196. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Alaska Marine Highway ferries would continue to sail even if a political impasse over the budget shuts down the state government on July 1st. That's the message of a 10-page memo released late Wednesday by Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration. It outlines which critical functions would continue to operate during a shutdown. Lawmakers are in Juneau for a special session to resolve the dispute. But time is running short. The governor's office said in a statement that, quote, the plan is to maintain the full AMHS schedule, unquote. But questions about whether ferry crew would continue to be paid or how that would occur were deferred to the Department of Administration. That department did not respond to questions as of midday Thursday. Summer is the busiest season for the Marine Highway. In July, there are six vessels scheduled to sail 7 days a week across coastal Alaska. Repatriation can be a long, traumatic, and exhausting experience without the proper help or laws. Now, a $50,000 grant will give the much-needed punch for repatriation projects in the Kodiak-Aleutic region of Alaska. KNBA's Hannah Bissett talks with the Aleutic Museum's collections curator about the grant and about repatriation.
The National Park Service awarded a $56,000 grant to the Aleut Museum for a project called Return Them. Museum collections curator Amanda Lancaster says the money will go towards the museum's efforts in locating and researching remains for possible repatriation. In the 1990s, the Native American Grave Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, was passed. NAGPRA gives tribes and descendants a legal avenue to pursue the repatriation, treatment, and disposition of their ancestral remains. Lancaster says that the Kodiak Aleut Supiak Repatriation Commission was created in 2007.
That commission just sort of, it created a manual that laid out the repatriation protocols.
The commission's original purpose was to repatriate more than 100 remains removed from the Cherkioff Island in the 1960s, as well as other sites. The commission created a manual in response to rising questions in the communities on how to package, identify, and bury remains once they had been returned. Lancaster says about 95% of the priorities set by the 2007 commission have been accomplished. The grant money will help update the manual to include practical information, such as packaging remains, ceremonies, and changes to NAGPRA.
So the biggest change in that law is that Alaska Native corporations used to have standing to claim remains, and now they no longer do. Now it's just federally recognized tribes.
In previous repatriations, sometimes remains are returned to tribes and communities in cardboard boxes, separated by bone types. An update to the manual would recommend treating the remains differently.
So typically when we are rehousing remains that come back to us, we try to use biodegradable, breathable materials. So if things come to us, you know, wrapped in plastic, we put them in unbleached muslin and, you know, in boxes that are breathable, cardboard boxes. So it's really up to the tribe, but we do want to be able to present them with different options of what other people have done.
In September, the museum and Kodiak's 10 federally recognized tribes will meet the Kodiak Aleut Supiak Repatriation Commission. They will discuss future repatriation efforts and a new manual reflecting the changes to the NAGPRA law. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Bissett.
A new version of the state budget from Governor Mike Dunleavy would set the permanent fund dividend at roughly $2,350, but it would draw more than planned from the permanent fund earnings. The new budget bill was introduced yesterday on the first day of the second special session. Lawmakers are discussing what it will take to avoid a state government shutdown on July 1st. A vote in the House on the original budget bill fell 4 votes short of the number needed to make the budget effective on that date. Representative Sarah Rasmussen, an Anchorage Republican, was absent for that first budget vote. She said she would vote to make the budget effective on July 1st, which reduces the number of votes needed to prevent a shutdown to 3. Rasmussen is not a member of either caucus. House Speaker Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican, was positive about the negotiations.
Nobody wants a shutdown, and I'm very optimistic.
Palmer Republican Representative Kathy Tilton is the minority caucus leader. She says members of her caucus want a public agreement from the majority caucus legislators on the components of a long-term plan for the state's budget. She says what lawmakers have said so far just isn't enough.
We've had this 154 days of no discussion about what this structural fix looks like, and we've had a plan that's been put in front of us, albeit a governor's plan and maybe not a perfect plan, but we have not even had discussion on that.
Tilton would not provide information on the details of the agreement her caucus is seeking. Members of the mostly Democratic House Majority Caucus have said Dunleavy, a Republican, chose to make a shutdown possible. They say decades of precedent and legal opinions support keeping the state government open. The current Department of Law disagrees that the precedents apply to what's happening this year. Fishing can be a dangerous business. Before the season, many fishermen take courses and training to ensure the safety of their boats and crew. As KDLG's Brian Venua reports, one fisherman got a first-hand reminder of the importance of safety training. Even though you often check forecasts to see what the weather will be when going long distances, one fisherman learned that predictions aren't always accurate.
Caleb Westfall has fished for salmon in Bristol Bay for 2 decades. Last year, he started halibut fishing in the spring before the first commercial salmon openers. Earlier this month, he was fishing in the waters near Togiak. His voyage home was met with an untimely storm. He and his crewmate were headed back to Dillingham when winds and waves picked up.
Got around the corner to protection, and then it was just a straight east wind on the other side there.
Westfall had expected 4-foot waves on his trip back. When they rounded the tip of the Nishigak Peninsula, they encountered giant swells.
Yeah, those 4-foot waves are now 16 plus, every once in a while 20, and surfing a 32-footer on those, a little difficult.
A heavy east wind meant he had to keep the bow of his boat, the fishing vessel Peter, pointed east to face the swells. As the waves struck his boat, he realized they needed help.
First, we hit the radio and, you know, did a distress vessel, kind of explain, like, you know, we're not sinking, but, you know, any wave here could take us over and capsize us.
As they called for help, fatigue started to set in.
And at some point, I had, you know, I'm thinking, you know, my arm's failing, my body is cramping. I'm kind of losing control of in my dexterity. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, those thoughts creep into your head that you can't do this forever. You are going to fail. And it's hard to try to multitask and disallow those thoughts. And so I just had to put it to one wave at a time.
Westfall says they were about 5 miles from shore. He didn't get a response to his call right away, but he kept reaching out.
Through the AMSI training, they always say even if you don't hear anybody, keep yapping, because they might be able to hear you and you might not be able to hear them back.
It turned out that multiple people heard his call. The Coast Guard flew to the location in a helicopter and OBI Seafoods sent a 100-foot tender. The tender broke waves and allowed Westfall to follow its surf while the Coast Guard monitored the situation. Westfall says he was lucky to get back to shore, and he says it was thanks to the extra effort he put into safety precautions.
It turned out to be a hellacious storm, but all my training and all my safety equipment worked. I kind of tell people a lot, like, I work super hard, and 95% of the time it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But 5% of the time there's an opportunity to either things get better or that extra hard work paid off.
They returned to the Dillingham Harbor around 2 a.m. the next morning.
And at some point, I had to make that decision of, you know, I was trying to figure out how much longer can I do this, you know. Mm-hmm. The whole thing took 25 hours coming from Togiak. So I was driving 25 hours straight, and about half of those hours were absolute panic hours.
Westfall says everyone on the water should make sure their safety equipment is up to date and be prepared for emergencies. In Dillingham, I'm Brian Venua.
Recent research suggests that climate change increases the input of mercury into the Arctic Ocean and ultimately into the amount found in fish and marine mammals. Robert Mason, a professor of marine sciences at the University of Connecticut, shared his findings live from the research vessel Sululiak in a presentation hosted by the University of Fairbanks Northwest Campus. Mason started his presentation by explaining that mercury is not a naturally occurring substance in ocean waters. Most of it comes from mining and coal burning in other parts of the world.
most of the mercury coming into the Arctic comes from somewhere else. It's not generated in the Arctic. People in the Arctic are one of the most exposed populations globally to mercury impacts. And then this is true for both humans and wildlife.
He goes on to explain that this high amount of mercury is due to the Arctic Ocean's strong relationship with the terrestrial environment. First, mercury is collected by plants in the tundra. Once the snow buries the vegetation, the mercury does not have the sunlight and heat it needs to break down and move back into the atmosphere. This leads the mercury to flow into the ocean with the snow melt and erosion, where it is absorbed by animals in the ocean's food chain. Mason says scientists are still trying to figure out whether melting sea ice will lead to more or less mercury in the ocean. However, his team's research found significant amounts of mercury in the shallow water of the Arctic Ocean, which suggests that changing sea ice conditions are increasing the amount of mercury in the ocean. Furthermore, melting permafrost moves mercury, which is stored in the soil, from the tundra to the ocean.
One of the ideas was that decreasing sea ice would lead to more release of mercury back to the atmosphere. I don't think that that is likely. And the changing sea ice conditions may actually enhance the chemistry in the atmosphere in the spring and lead to more mercury.
Most of the mercury in the ocean is called methyl mercury. Methyl mercury is absorbed faster than it is disposed of in organisms, meaning that fish and marine mammals and ultimately humans who eat them can accumulate higher and higher levels of methyl mercury. Mason says small children are at greater risk of experiencing negative health effects after eating animals with methyl mercury.
Because it's a neurotoxin, it affects the developing child much more. Although there are potential effects on adults, it takes a higher concentration to have an effect on an adult than it does have on a child.
While mercury accumulation will continue to be a growing issue, there is no need to avoid consuming sea life. The FDA still recommends that both adults and children consume a variety of smaller fish that might accumulate less mercury than larger fish. According to Mason, research suggests that some marine mammals and birds are able to detoxify the methyl mercury in their systems. He also says that mammals like bowheads that consume large amounts of copepods and other small creatures do not seem to accumulate high amounts of mercury. It's also important to note that the big concern with mercury is its presence in sea life, so there's no need to worry about mercury when swimming or drinking water. Ultimately, more research is needed to understand how animals respond to, accumulate, and detoxify methyl mercury. For contaminant levels in seals, whales, and sea lions, contact Greg Bullough, Supervisory Biologist for NOAA's Alaska Regional Office, at 271-3023. Kinross Fort Knox has begun developing a project near the company's mine and mill north of Fairbanks. Kinross officials say that they hope to begin producing ore from the so-called Gill Sourdough Project by the end of the year and continue mining it through 2023. When the company hopes to begin developing a much bigger project near Tok. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Kinross Fort Knox spokesperson Anna Acheson says the company's been exploring the Gill Sourdough Project since the early 1980s. But she says Kinross officials have decided to begin developing the project now because gold is fetching nearly $1,800 an ounce and because Gill is only about 9 miles from Fort Knox, so it won't require much infrastructure.
There might be things like, you know, a temporary maintenance shop or a small warehouse, an office, things like that.
Acheson says Kinross has paid many millions of dollars over the 25 years Fort Knox has been in operation to develop the mine there and expensive infrastructure like its mill and tailings storage facility where mine tailings are kept in huge piles after the ore is processed.
Those are often high cost, high capital.
They're also much more environmentally sensitive. So Acheson says Kinross wants to get as much use out of the Fort Knox facilities as possible and avoid the need to build them at outlying projects like Gill and the much larger Manh Cho mine near Tok.
A lot of that is infrastructure that you can utilize bringing ore in from different areas. So you don't have to build another mill somewhere else. You don't have to build a tailings facility. It's somewhere else in Alaska.
That's why Kinross plans to develop a large open pit mine and haul ore from the Manh Choh to the mill, nearly 250 miles away, in tractor trailer sized dump trucks that will run at the rate of 4 trucks per hour every day for up to 5 years, beginning in 2024. Acheson says that and the need to lease office space and recruit workers around Tok differentiate the two so-called feeder projects.
So similar in the sense that the ore is feeding into the Fort Knox mill, but beyond that, you know, there's a lot of differences between the two.
Acheson says Gill and Manh Choh are the only feeder projects Kinross is pursuing right now, but she adds the high price of gold has opened up new opportunities for the industry.
There is a lot of exploration going on around Alaska and a lot of exploration going on around the Fairbanks area and this region down in Tok. So that is a key part of our business model going forward and certainly something we're open to.
In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A man was rescued from a storm drain in Fairbanks. According to a Fairbanks Firefighters Union post, the man was found trapped in a storm drain underneath the intersection of Lathrop Street and 10th Avenue Tuesday morning. It says firefighters used a rotary chop saw to cut around the edge of a manhole drain to free the lid and get the man out. It says the man had been trapped in the storm drain for several hours. City of Fairbanks spokesperson Teal Sodern says he told police that he'd been drinking at a bar the night before and woke up in the storm drain. Sodern says a passerby heard him calling for help and dialed 911 shortly after 6:30 a.m. She says the man was evaluated by medics but refused treatment and walked away on his own power.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. America's blue economy doubled the growth of the nation's GDP. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
The nation's maritime economy grew at a pace that nearly doubled the growth of the entire U.S. GDP in 2019. GDP stands for gross domestic product and reflects the total market value of all finished goods and services in a specific time frame. It's used to estimate the size of an economy and its growth rate, a sort of comprehensive scorecard of a country's economic health. A first-ever report released this month by the U.S. Department of Commerce showed that the so-called blue economy grew by 4.2% and generated nearly $400 billion to the GDP. Along with the oceans, the report includes the Great Lakes and looks at the contributions from shoreside businesses. Those businesses generated $666 billion in sales in 2019 and supported 2.4 million jobs. Commercial fishing, including aquaculture, contributed $27 billion, making it the sixth largest segment of the blue economy. The top marine economic activity in 2019 was tourism and recreation, including coastal trips and travel and offshore boating and fishing. That accounted for 35.3% of gross output, totaling $235 billion. National Defense and Public Administration accounted for just over 27% of the U.S. marine economy. Offshore oil, gas, and minerals contributed 14%. And here's an interesting data point. Non-recreational ship and boat building contributed over $31 billion, a 37.2% increase from the previous year, making it one of the fastest-growing marine economic activities. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 10, date issued 10 a.m. on June 23rd. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, June 24th, till 9 p.m. Saturday, June 26th, in the inner Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be increased from noon Thursday, June 24th, to 9 p.m. Saturday, June 26th, in the inner Iqaluk section, and includes those waters within 500 yards of the stream mouth of Iqaluk River, stream number 256201. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Thursday, June 24th, to 9 p.m. Saturday, June 26th, in the following areas: in the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. The currently scheduled commercial salmon fishing period in the Iqaluk Bay section, north of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape, will now be scheduled for 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, June 23rd, to 9 p.m. Friday, June 25th. As previously announced, the following areas will remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the inner and outer Upper Station sections of the Alitak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters are currently reduced until further notice in the following locations: in the inner Upper Station section of the Alitak District, water will remain open to the stream terminus of Olga Creek, stream number 257304. In Fowl Bay, to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. And in Waterfall Bay, to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822. And to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse hand gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you. And here's your Island Messenger for Thursday, the 24th day of June. It is the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:09. It will set again at 11:15 this evening. That will give us 18 hours and 6 minutes of daylight, a loss of 29 seconds compared to yesterday. We have an outgoing tide. Our next high tide will be at 3:06 p.m. here on the east side, a 7.2-foot tide. Over on the west side, your next high tide will be at 3:20 p.m. in Zachar Bay. That's going to be a 14.2-foot tide. 52 degrees down here in beautiful downtown Kodiak. And we're looking for rain to start in earnest after 2 p.m. today, high near 52. Southeast winds are going to gust as high as 25. And rain is expected to continue overnight, low of about 48 overnight. Southeast winds to continue, gusting as high as 30 overnight. And the rain will continue until about 11 a.m. on Friday morning. Then just mostly cloudy skies Friday, with a high near 54. Southeast winds continuing to blow as high as 25 on Friday. Mariners, here's your forecast for Chiniak Bay. South wind at 20 knots right now and seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast winds to 15 knots, seas to 5 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory for tonight. Southeast 25 tonight, seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for southeast 20, seas to 7 feet in Marmot Bay. In the Shillicoff Strait, we have a small craft advisory tonight and Friday. Southeast 20 right now and seas to 5 feet. Southeast 25, seas to 6 feet tonight. And for tomorrow in the Shelikoff, southeast 25, seas to 5 feet. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session tonight, 6:30 p.m., Bayside Fire Hall. That is open to the public. And next week, on Thursday, July 1st, the Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers. Senior Citizens of Kodiak's Board of Directors will be meeting tomorrow, 11 a.m. in the Senior Citizens Multipurpose Room. The meeting's open to the public. For more information, call the Senior Center at 486-6181. And on Saturday at the library, They're having their first Family Fun Day. That's happening between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. There will be multiple activity stations featuring science, stories, crafts, and games centered on the theme Reading Colors Your World. All activities count toward your summer reading challenge. So Family Fun Day, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the library. The library is open 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. If you have any questions, call the library at 486-8686.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.